everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on sex and reproduction right after this. You know, marriage is a state-licensed business. It's a three-party, limited general partnership between you, your spouse, and the state. And like any other state-licensed enterprise, it is regulated, and in this case, it's regulated by the Welfare Department, the Department of Family Services, and Family Court. And the best part about marriage is that you have no input into or say-so over the marriage, divorce, dissolution, custody, alimony, child support, protective custody, or restraining orders. But you get to pay for all of the above, and if you fail to pay, you go to jail. Marriage is the most important, and marriage is the most expensive contract that you can engage in. It is more binding, and it is more costly than your military enlistment or your 30-year home mortgage. And you probably know a whole lot less about marriage than you do your military obligation or your house payments. 67% of all marriages in the United States end in divorce. But whether you're a husband or a wife, you do have rights, privileges, and immunities to advance, to protect, or to defend against any breach of this three-party limited general partnership called the marriage contract. And that's why you should know and understand the terms and conditions of your marriage contract before you marry. And you should write that contract yourself instead of letting the state write it for you. So whether you're married or not, why don't you write for my general law CD set and let me share some vital information with you about the law and this marriage contract. Just call direct. The number is 417-273-4967. That's a 4-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. That's easy to remember. It's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and then send an email request for your free general law CD package. Do it right now before you forget. All right, we're talking about sex and reproduction. Last time we were talking about Proverbs chapter 5, Proverbs chapter 7, and David Barton's book on America to Pray or Not to Pray. I thought we'd start today with divorce. Divorce. A lot of animals mate for life, especially birds, you know, like parrots and doves. And I suppose there's probably even some mammals that mate for life. You see these kinds of stories on nature, you know, on PBS. And human beings mate for life. Human beings mate for life. Well, that's the design mechanism, but believe it or not, in the Bible, there is an escape clause. An escape clause. It's called divorce. And while the design mechanism, and I know my Aunt Bessie and Uncle Buster, they stayed within the design mechanism. They married once. They married for life. They were married for 40 or 50 or 60 years. I don't know how long it was. My Uncle Buster died when he was 87 or 85, something like that. Aunt Bessie died around 85, 87. But divorce is also known in the Gordon family, and I've had a number of my family members who were divorced. I'm divorced once. Now, religious people oftentimes come to a conclusion that divorce is wrong. Divorce is adultery. Divorce is against the law, but that's not true. That's not correct. And while many of the patriarchs of the Bible, you know, if you stop and think about the patriarchs in Scripture, Moses, for instance, married, and he didn't get divorced, or at least there's no recording of his being divorced. You take a look at all the patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, there's no divorce there. And that includes Abraham and Hagar. Hagar wasn't a wife. But there is a wife called a concubine. Jacob had two concubines and two wives. Solomon had, I think it was 700 wives and 300 concubines. Or maybe it was the other way around. I kind of forget now whether it was 300 wives and 700 concubines, but one or the other. He had 1,000 wives. Now, a wife, you know, is a pretty important asset. You'll see that in Proverbs chapter 31 when we get to it. But leaving aside the important asset that this female is, this female gets rewarded as a wife upon the death of her husband. She inherits everything. Just like Queen Elizabeth, you know, when she's a female, she inherits everything, and she keeps her name, Windsor. She married a guy by the name of Mountbatten. He's called Prince Philip. And he's not King Philip. She's Queen Elizabeth, and he's called her consort. Now, it's kind of the other way around. In this case here, he doesn't inherit. His family doesn't inherit from Queen Elizabeth. And that's what a concubine's limitations are. A concubine is a wife who does not inherit and whose children do not inherit. They can have gifts, but they don't walk off, you know, with the inheritance. Polygamy is another part of sex and reproduction. We'll talk about polygamy here a little bit later. But divorce comes in to the game in Deuteronomy chapter 24, verses 1 through 4. Here's the divorce chapter, or the divorce statute. Now listen to this. When a man has taken a wife and married her, and it comes to pass that she finds no favor in his eyes because he's found some uncleanness in her. We call this grounds for divorce, some uncleanness in her. Then let him write her a bill of divorcement and give it in her hand and send her out of his house. Notice here, it's the husband who's writing the bill of divorce to his wife. Now, today we don't do that, do we? You want to get a divorce? Well, you didn't write up any bill of divorcement and put it in your wife's hands now, did you? No, you went down and hired a lawyer. And he went in and filed some papers with the state. Because, you see, with that state license, you have a three-party limited general partnership. In a patriarchal marriage, you have a two-party partnership. You have a two-party contract for deed is what it really boils down to, because the contract terminates upon consummation of the marriage. And a patriarchal marriage is something different than a state marriage, a state-licensed marriage. There's three forms of marriage. You can have a common-law marriage, a patriarchal marriage, or a licensed marriage. Most people, of course, opt for the licensed marriage. That's the most common. There are a few people that, from time to time, you know, they call it shacking up or living together. You probably heard that term. They have a common law marriage. Sometimes they'll use that term. And then you have a patriarchal marriage. Nobody ever talks about patriarchal marriage. When we get to marriage, we'll take a look at this thing called patriarchal marriage, and a little bit different than the other two. He goes on to say here concerning divorce in verse 2 that when she's departed out of his house, she can go and be another man's wife. So when this woman is divorced, she can go out and become another man's wife. Now, I know there's some religious people over here that disagree with that. And they say, no, once you're divorced, you can never remarry. And if you do remarry, that's adultery. Well, that's probably good religion, and it's probably good theology, and it's probably good church doctrine. I'm not criticizing it, but it's not scriptural. You didn't get that instruction from the God of Abraham. You got that instruction from the Pope, or you got that instruction from the pastor, or you got that instruction from the catechism, or from some other source of authority other than the Bible. Now, I'm not here to run anybody's religion down, you know. If you If you believe that marriage is bad, wicked, terrible, awful, and evil, that's fine. Stay single. If you believe that marriage cannot be terminated by divorce, well, that's fine. No problem with that. I'm just citing to you from the Bible. I thought I'd share something a little bit different than the average Joe Sixpack gets over here, you know, in public school and sex education class or down here in the local church. Verse 3, if the latter husband hates her and he writes her a bill of divorcement and gives it in her hand and then sends her out of his house, or if the latter husband dies, which took her to be his wife, then her former husband, which sent her away, may not take her again to be his wife after that she's defiled. After she has had sexual relations with another man, she can never go back to any former husband. I only had one case of that come here to the school, but it was kind of an interesting case. A man and his wife came here to school, and while we were going through, I don't remember what the class was, probably tax and status, we got to the subject matter of divorce, which is a tax strategy, and when we got to this section right here on divorce, she was very visibly upset, and she said, "Oh my God, we've been married and divorced." And then, after 6 years, we remarried again, which is precisely what the statute here prohibits. Her former husband, which sent her away, may not take her again to be his wife after she's defiled. And I said, "Well, lady, did you remarry or did you have sexual relations with some other man?" And she said, "No." I said, "Well, can you see that? It says after she's defiled, after you've had sexual relations with your second husband, boyfriend, or, you know, today people don't remarry. They just go from one guy to the next, you know. They just kind of act like alley cats, you know." And I said, "Well, that's your saving grace, because if you didn't have sexual relations with some other woman, or excuse me, with some other man, then the fact that you went back to your former husband, all that proves is that you divorced the state, the two of you." And then I said, "Now, do you have a marriage license?" And they said, "No, we don't have a marriage license." I said, "Well, now you've accomplished your goal. You divorced the state." Now, when you get married, you ought to leave the state out of your bedroom. That's kind of been my opinion. But, you know, most people, they kind of like the state in there because the state gives them benefits. That's why the sodomites want marriage. You know, marriage has a lot of state benefits that go along with it. Taxpayer-supported and taxpayer-paid-for benefits that come from the state. And that's the hook, you know, that the state uses to get involved in your marriage, in your family, in your children. That's where Social Lady gets her powers, from that marriage license. So, because that's an abomination. God says that for a woman to be divorced and then go have sexual relations with another man, remarry, and then come back to her first husband, that's an abomination before the Eternal. "And you shall not cause the land to sin which the Eternal your God gives you for an inheritance." Don't do that here in this country. This land is an inheritance. And if you violate these laws, then the land will spew you out. And that's where we here in the United States are on the cusp of going into national captivity, as we see in Leviticus chapter 26. So there's your divorce statute. I didn't write it, so don't get mad at me and send me an email and say that, you know, I'm the Antichrist or something like that. I'm a reporter, not the Antichrist. I'm a reporter, and I report legal information. And you can't talk law without talking biblical law, because in Anglo-Saxon countries, the basis of our law comes from the Bible. That's the basis of our Constitution. Here in the United States, we have 22 principles that come from the Ten Commandments incorporated into our federal Constitution. Our founding fathers did not believe in separation of church and state. That's a concept that came about in more recent times. I don't deny that we practice that here in the United States. We've expunged God, expunged the Bible, and expunged the Ten Commandments from our public schools and our public institutions. No doubt about that. But that wasn't the intent of George Washington, John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, or anybody that signed the Declaration of Independence. Now, there's the story on divorce. So if you've been divorced and remarried, you know, you're not committing any crime. As far as I know, Elizabeth Taylor has been divorced and remarried about 7 or 8 times. I've lost track. I can't keep track of that woman's husbands, but I pointed that out the other day. If she was so good in bed, how come she's been married 8 times? I mean, that woman is an 8-time loser. I'm not so sure that she's near as good in bed as you boys think she was. Or think she is. So there's that story on divorce. Now let's take a look at another guy over here, a guy by the name of Onan. And a lot of times people, religious people in particular, you know, they're really down on this thing called masturbation. And as I pointed out to you, sex in humans is for two purposes. First, I guess, and foremost, it's for reproduction. But secondly, it's a binder. It's a pleasurable enterprise created by God to be used like nitroglycerin in the bedroom by these two people in total privacy. Just between them and nobody else in the whole wide world, and that includes the state of Missouri and New York and Florida and everybody else, to the exclusion of social lady and divorce lawyers and everybody else. Now, that's the design mechanism. And so the religious people, they read the Bible, and I guess they come to places that they disagree with, like this section right here on divorce. And so they throw that little piece out, and they say, well, that's God made a mistake there, so we're going to fix his mistake, and we'll do that in our catechism or in our religious writing. Or maybe they don't use the Bible at all. Bill Clinton did. He'd come out of church. I saw him on the news, and he'd be carrying a Bible under his arm, you know. I always thought that was kind of hypocritical for Bill Clinton, the consummate hillbilly in a whorehouse with a credit card, to be carrying a Bible under his arm. But then, you know. Well, over here in Genesis chapter 38, if you got a Bible and you want to follow along, go over to Genesis chapter 38. This is where everybody goes to, and they point out that if you practice masturbation in any form, you're going to go right straight to hell. And they cite a story of a guy by the name of Onan, O-N-A-N. He was a son of Judah. This guy, Judah. Genesis chapter 38, if you got a Bible, flip over here and we'll take a look here. It's in verse 6 through 10, just 4 verses or 5. Genesis 38, Judah took a wife for his son Ur. Ur was Judah's firstborn, whose name was Tamar. And I want you to notice here, because we're going to take a look at this a little later. Judah took a wife for Ur, his firstborn. Now, you know, that's kind of peculiar, isn't it? What do you mean? You mean the father chooses the wife for his son? I mean, we don't do that in America, do we? This guy is practicing patriarchal marriage. And you people practice state marriage. I just thought I'd throw that out there for you. Abraham selected the wife for his boy, Isaac. Now, there was a guy by the name of Samson, and he ran across this gorgeous Philistine woman. And he went to his daddy, and he says, hey, Dad, go down there and get that Philistine woman for me. And his dad said, are there no women in Israel that you have to go out here to these Philistines to find a wife? You mean there's no girls here in California? You got to go to New York to find some woman. So anyway, old Samson, you know, he was kind of insistent. He had in his mind that he was going to choose his own wife. He wasn't going to have his daddy butting in to his marriage. And so he went out here and he married this Philistine woman. That didn't turn out very well. Then he found another Philistine woman, you know, and her name was Delilah. And politics in that case ran a little thicker than blood. And so she betrayed him, and he ended up getting killed over these women. He couldn't control sex. Solomon couldn't control sex. Bill Clinton cannot control his sexual desires and his lusts. I mean, it's pretty common. And we saw that in Proverbs 5 and Proverbs 7. When a woman turns on to a man, there's only one example in all of history, to my knowledge, only one, where a man turned a woman down and said no. And that was Joseph. And he was working for this, he was in slavery is what it was, and his mistress wanted to have sexual relations with him, and he said no. She got a little ticked off, and she had him arrested for rape, and he went to prison on a bum rape rap. So if some of you guys are locked up in prison on a bum rape rap, it isn't something that's new. It's been around for a long time. And that was the first case. But it's the only case that I can think of, that I know of, where a man ever said no to a woman. And that's why I mentioned to you last time that sexual relations in human beings, just like it is with cattle, is controlled by the female, not the male. And we've got this kind of mixed up. You know, you see these Hollywood idols come blowing into town like an Elvis Presley, and all these girls are lined up and they're jumping up and down and hooping and hollering over here, you know, like they've all got hot pants or something, like a bunch of heifers in a field. And it's exactly backwards. That's Hollywood, but that's not the natural. That's not the normal. That's not the God-ordained or desired, designed methodology in human relations as it relates to sex. But anyway, this guy Onan over here comes into play over a law called the duty of the husband's brother. Duty of the husband's brother. And there's a law here that has to do with reproduction. Doesn't have anything to do with pleasure in sex or bonding or anything like that. Just simple animal reproduction. It has to do with an inheritance and an inheritance law. And this guy, Judah, picks a wife named Tamar for his boy, Ur. And then Ur dies. Ur, for some reason, I don't know if he got killed in a car wreck or whatever happened, but something happened here. And this Judah over here took a wife for his boy, Ur, his firstborn, whose name was Tamar. And Ur, Judah's firstborn, was wicked in the sight of the Eternal, and the Eternal slew him. God did not like this marriage at all. He did not like Ur at all. And he killed him. You know, so much for sweet Jesus, you know, who loves everybody. He did not like this guy, and he killed him. And Judah said to Onan, "Will you go in unto your brother's wife and marry her and raise up seed to your brother?" So Judah goes to his second-born Onan. He says, "Okay, now your brother's dead. Now you go in and you take Tamar as your wife and raise up seed for her, because she's the wife of the firstborn." And this is called the duty of the husband's brother. And the offspring that comes from that union is going to inherit the family inheritance. And Onan, he's saying to himself, as we see here in verse 9, Onan knew that the seed should not be his. And it came to pass that when he went in unto his brother's wife, that he spilled it on the ground. What did he spill on the ground? Or on the bed sheets? Or on the back seat of his chivy? I don't know where they were doing this, but that spilled it on the ground is his seed called semen. He spilled it on the ground, lest that he should give seed to his brother in the thing which he did displease the Eternal, wherefore he slew him also. Now people read those four or five verses there and they say, aha, masturbation is against the law. There isn't anything in that statement that has anything remotely to do with masturbation. Read it again. It says right here in verse 9, Onan knew that the seed should not be his, and it came to pass when he went in unto his brother's wife. I mean, he's in bed with Tamar, boys and girls. He went in unto her. Now, whether or not he masturbated, or whether or not he was about to reach orgasm and then pulled his penis out of her, and then spilled his seed, ejaculated on the bed sheets or wherever they were doing this, he would not copulate inside that woman, and because of that, because he would not perform this duty. There's a law here. we'll get to that law here in a second, called the duty of the husband's brother. God killed him. Now, as it turns out, Tamar lives happily ever after she becomes pregnant by Judah, her father-in-law, which is another crime, but then that's another story for another day. There's a lot of crimes. There's a lot of sex crimes that go on in the Bible, and God has explained to you pretty straightforward, I thought. Throughout the scripture, he shows the right use of sex, the right use of this highly volatile nitroglycerin, and then the wrong use. And then from time to time, he explains with each law, of which I told you the other day, there's 18 laws that deal with this thing of sex and marriage. This is just one more of them. Now, I've been around for a long time. I have never seen the duty of the husband's brother actually performed. I've never come to a case or come across a case where this was a necessity. But you can see that in inheritance laws, when we deal with an inheritance, and in this case, the firstborn, married a woman, and then she didn't have any children, she didn't have any heirs, then God comes along and says, okay, we got to have a solution to this problem. There's a legal problem here, and God has come along and he has devised a law. Now, Onan had a wife, probably had children, and said he knew that the seed wouldn't be his. And he did not want that inheritance to go anywhere but to him. Because, see, once your brother dies, well, then who's second in line? You know, who's the second guy? So the duty of the husband's brother is a statute that God created to cover this eventuality. And when the eventuality came up, Onan said, well, I'm not going to practice that law. And so God killed him. That doesn't mean that God is going to kill everybody that does that. He killed this guy, Onan, because this particular union between Judah's son and Tamar was pretty important, because Judah, in Genesis 49, verse 10, received a very important historical inheritance. That was the scepter promise that Queen Elizabeth has to this day. And that is the power to rule over the tribes of Israel. Very important. There was some money involved, probably $50-75 million, but in addition to that. Now, if you inflation adjusted that $50 million, just add about 10 to that, and it'll be about $500 million. Abraham was a pretty valuable guy, pretty rich fellow, and he passed on quite an inheritance to his boy Isaac, who passed it on to Jacob, who then passed part of it on to Judah, but the lion's share of it went to Joseph. So there's the story of the duty of the husband's brother in the context that religious people have used to call this masturbation. Has nothing to do with masturbation. Just read it for yourself. So if you think masturbation is bad, wicked, terrible, awful, it may be. I don't know. But if it is, the Bible doesn't say so. You didn't get that from the scripture. And I've never read any medical literature that would say that masturbation is going to kill you or have any other deleterious effects. And so my conclusion is that masturbation is a normal process and has nothing to do with you going to hell and burning for eternity for masturbation. Okay, let's flip over here and take a look at this thing called the duty of the husband's brother. And for that, I have to change books here. I have this great big 3-ring binder, which is 3 inches thick. And then I'm going to flip over here to number 59. I'm going to mark it out here, number 59, which deals with this thing of duty of the husband's brother. And shows you the statute here in Genesis 38, verses 6 through 10, which I just read to you. And this is the background to the story. And then the statute itself is located in Deuteronomy 25, verses 5 through 10. That's Deuteronomy chapter 25, verses 5 through 10. But before we get into the duty of the husband's brother, let's take a break right here and remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. And the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. And if you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.com. org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives. It can be accessed through the website, and the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. If you'd like one, just call the law school and ask for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember our website, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, getting back here to the duty of the husband's brother. Deuteronomy 25, verses 5 through 10, if brethren dwell together and one of them dies and has no child, the wife of the dead shall not marry without unto a stranger. Her husband's brother shall go in unto her and take her to him to wife and perform the duty of a husband's brother unto her. And it shall be that the firstborn which she bears shall succeed in the name of his brother which is dead, that his name be not put out of Israel. And if the man like not to take his brother's wife, then let his brother's wife go up to the gate unto the elders and say, my husband's brother refuses to raise up unto his brother a name in Israel, and he will not perform the duty of my husband's brother. Then the elders of his city shall call him and speak unto him. And if he stand to it and says, I like not to take her, then shall his brother's wife come in unto him in the presence of the elders, and loose his shoe from off his foot, and spit in his face, and shall answer and say, so shall it be done unto that man that will not build up his brother's house. And his name shall be called in Israel the house of him that hath his shoe loosed. Now, there's an actual story of this in Ruth, a little short book called Ruth. And in chapter 4, verses 1 through 10, is an actual example of Ruth, who was entitled to be married, and she went to a guy by the name of Boaz. Now, Boaz, if we look at the genealogy here, I think was about 87 years old. Very wealthy fellow. And here's this young woman, and she's of childbearing age, obviously. She's somewhere under 40. I mean, you know, talk about a May-December marriage, you know. This is a young woman. And her mother-in-law, in this case, mother-in-law, told her, well, go over here to Boaz. She made a mistake. And Boaz reminded her that there was a younger fellow, that there was another guy over here who was next of kin, who should carry out the duty of the husband's brother rather than this guy Boaz. And so she went to this guy, and he said, no, I don't want to do that. And so they went through this little story here of loosing his shoe. She spit in his face and then went on to marry Boaz, who was the second in line. Notice that this isn't a capital felony, although it cost Onan his life. And that's because God himself said, you know, you want to give me the finger now. Listen to this. So there's the story of the duty of the husband's brother as it relates to this duty of marriage. Now, this also brings up the subject matter of polygamy. This is a religious hot potato. A case by the name of Reynolds versus U.S. kind of set it to rest back in 1878. But there are 24 cases of polygamy that are referenced in the Bible. King David, for instance, was a polygamist, and he had 6 wives. And God said to David, after he had committed adultery with this woman, Bathsheba, he said, you know, didn't I give you your master Saul's wives? I mean, David, when he took over the throne, took over Saul's families and Saul's wives. Now, he had a couple of wives of his own and took those. Now, you know, a lot of times, especially religious people, they get really uptight and upset about polygamy. They don't like that polygamy thing at all. And they're really down on the Mormons who practice polygamy. There's an official policy in the Mormon church, you know, that we don't practice polygamy. That's political. And then there's about 30,000 Mormon polygamous families in the United States. And those people aren't breaking any laws. Well, they're not breaking any scriptural laws. They're in violation of the laws of the United States or the laws of Utah or New York or California. They're not in violation of the law of God. And this is another one of those examples of the conflicts that we sometimes get into with the state. Now, if you'll think about this, you polygamous people out there, you know, and I've had a few of them come through school here, the secular law, the law of Utah does not ban you from having sexual relations with two or more women. The law of Utah bars you from having two or more wives. Well, what is it that creates marriage? And of course, in the minds of most Americans, it's a marriage license. Excuse me, boys and girls, but where did David, King David, get his marriage license? Where did Adam and Eve get their marriage license? Is there any mention in the scripture that Isaac got a marriage license? Can you think of any place in the Bible where anybody went to the king or to the state or went to any public agency or welfare lady or social woman or whatever to get permission to marry? Can you think of any? Because I never have been able to find one. I can't think of a single one. In the Bible, what we see is patriarchal marriage, family-ordained marriages. Now, there is certainly a thing here called the common law marriage. It's also known as a shotgun wedding. It's the results of fornication. When we get to fornication, we'll talk about this thing of a shotgun marriage. And when we get to marriage, I'll get in a little deeper here to this thing of marriage and how it's created. And there's 3 kinds of marriage. Remember, there's the state-licensed marriage, common-law marriage, and then patriarchal marriage. I think you ought to think about patriarchal marriage, especially if you're going to practice polygamy, because God doesn't have any laws against polygamy. There are some laws that regulate polygamy, but it's certainly not a crime to have 2 wives or 6 wives or 16 wives. And the state will not punish you for having 2, 9, or 16 wives unless you go down and get a marriage license. So if you want to have 2, 9, or 16 wives, why don't you have 2, 9, or 16 wives in a patriarchal marriage relationship and the state isn't going to bother you? The state doesn't care anything at all about immorality. You know, if you want to go have sexual relations with 2 women, if you want to have a mistress on the side, there's no problem with that. The state of New York isn't going to punish you. Elliot Spitzer isn't going to come out with some kind of, you know, some kind of a warrant for your arrest because you're having sexual relations now with your mistress. He's going to get real upset, though, if you have 2 marriage licenses. Or if you're running around with 2 or 3 wives in a common law marriage along with your state licensed marriage. Now, he'll get real excited about that. But if you want to practice patriarchal marriage under the scripture, you can have as many wives as you want. And there are 24 examples of that. And almost all of them are dysfunctional families. Almost all of them. And in fact, Solomon, I mentioned this to you last time, Solomon came to a conclusion, and remember it was God who wrote this, so you know all scripture is given by inspiration of God. He used Solomon to write it down. Solomon had the most experience. And he said, you ought to be satisfied with the breasts of the wife of your youth. That's one wife. That's plenty. But polygamy is a business. You know, marriage is a business. First and foremost, marriage is a business. Sex is the frosting that goes on the cake. And that's why the old ladies used to use this term, she married well. She married well. Now, there's one other chapter here in the Bible. It's Leviticus chapter 18. That talks about who you should have sexual relations with and who you should not have sexual relations with. I mentioned to you that sex is like nitroglycerin. There's 18 statutes that govern and regulate this enterprise called sexual relations. We just saw one. Here's one of the statutes called the duty of the husband's brother. It's not a capital felony. If you refuse to marry your dead brother's wife, That's fine. You can do that. There's a ceremony that you ought to go through, and she ought to spit in your face because you've refused to do this. But God has not equated this with witchcraft or with murder, although in Onan's case it cost him his life, but that's what we call an anomaly in law. And notice that it wasn't a bunch of men that took him out and stoned him to death because he broke the law. It was God himself. And if there's some damage that comes from this, then God may owe Onan 100 times the liquidated damages. Maybe there's a wrongful death here. I don't know. That's between Onan and God in the judgment. It's not for me to second guess it, but I'm just here as a reporter to report how this law works. So tuck it away in your heart. Now there's a thing called fornication. Fornication, that's premarital sexual relations before marriage. So let me back up here to number 44 on the subject matter of fornication, since it's a very popular pastime here in the United States. In fact, we pretty much live for fornication here in this country. It's portrayed in the television and newspapers and you know, all the media, you know, as being the thing to do. Bill Clinton, you know, is a stud because he's a fornicator. I don't know how many affairs that he had that we knew about, you know. And you can just about figure that for every one that you heard about or that you know about, Jennifer Flowers or whatever her name was, you know. Jennifer Flowers, I don't know, maybe that was some other politician's mistress. I kind of lose track of all these politicians' mistresses and sexual flings and affairs. I don't know why Americans get so excited and upset about this, you know, with their politicians. In France, you know, they don't get excited. You mean you can have a big affair going on in France and the prime minister or the premier of France, you know, he can be having sexual relations, you know, with three or four other women over here, goes to a whorehouse. Nobody gets excited in France, but God, don't let it happen in England or the United States. I mean, you know, we are the world's premier hypocrites. I mean, we just get real excited about that. While we ourselves are out practicing all these practices, and Americans, you know, they're in favor of what goes on in the bedroom is private. And it ought not to interfere with a politician's duties or jobs or one thing or another, as is evidenced by Bill Clinton. I don't know where this hypocrisy comes from. 65% of Americans go to church. It may be that they're so biblically illiterate that they don't understand the difference between right and wrong. That could be an example. Well, over here under the subject matter of fornication, law number 44 here, if a man entices a maid that is not betrothed, and he lies with her, he shall surely endow her to be his wife. If her father utterly refuse to give her unto him, he shall pay money according to the dowry of virgins, which is 50 shekels of silver. As you can see here in Deuteronomy 22, verses 28 and 29, if a man finds a damsel that is a virgin, which is not betrothed, and lay hold on her, and lies with her, and they be found, then the man that lays with her shall give unto the damsel's father 50 shekels of silver, and she shall be his wife. Because he has humbled her, he may not put her away all of his days. Now there's a distinction here between put away and divorce. Remember we talked about divorce here a little earlier, and I know that somebody's going to come up and say, well, what about Matthew chapter 5? What about Matthew chapter 5? Well, okay, what about it? You know, let me just throw it back in your face. What about it? Flip over to Matthew chapter 5 and let's analyze that one. See, what does it tell us? What's the instruction? Well, in Matthew chapter 5, there's a story here about divorce. I think it's about... I thought it was Matthew chapter 5. Here it is, divorce, verse 31. It's been said that whosoever shall put away his wife, let him give her a writing of divorcement. Okay, so there in Matthew 5, verse 31, is a reference to Deuteronomy 24, verses 1 through 4. It has been said, it has been written, give her a bill of divorcement. Here comes Jesus along. In verse 32, but I say unto you that whosoever shall put away his wife, saving for the cause of fornication, causes her to commit adultery, and whosoever shall marry her that is divorced commits adultery. And people look at that and they say, well, there, see? See? The law has been changed. Oh, come on now, boys and girls. Come on now. Hang on a second. If the law has been changed, that means that the divorce law in Deuteronomy 24 had to be repealed. Can you point to any enabling clause or enabling legislation in the Bible for any such change in the law? Well, somebody's going to say, well, right there it is. You know, it's in Matthew 5:32. What is it? That's news to me. News to me. And I'll tell you why. As I flip back here to the beginning of the book, there are some poignant statements made. Jesus, you know, the same Jesus that you're saying now has repealed the law, made a couple of comments. In Luke 4, verse 4, Jesus answered and said, it is written that man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. All right, so does that include Deuteronomy 24, verses 1 through 4? Does every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God include Deuteronomy 24? Well, boys and girls, when that word was uttered in Matthew 5, verse 32, it was not written, and the New Testament had not been written, and there wasn't a single word in the New Testament because it didn't exist. So he said, referencing Deuteronomy 24, it has been said, and man lives by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. Every word. And in Matthew 5:17, he says, think not that I've come to destroy the law or the prophets. I'm not come to destroy, but to fulfill. So in Matthew 5:17, he said, I don't want you to think that I came to destroy Deuteronomy 24, verses 1 through 4. I came to fulfill that law. I did not come to destroy it. He has more to say. In John 10, verse 35, it says, the scripture cannot be broken. In Hebrews 13, verse 8, it says, Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And in Titus 1, verse 2, he says, he's the God that cannot lie. And in 2 Timothy 3:16, he says, all scripture is given by inspiration of God. Now, come on, kids. He said that man lives by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. Not half of them, or two-thirds of them, or four or five, but every word. So how do we reconcile Deuteronomy 24, verses 1 through 4, with this translation over here in Matthew 5, verse 31 and 32? Okay, so let's take a look at the word here in Matthew 5, 31, 32. Let me get my Bible over here again. Verse 32. Notice the word divorced down here on the second to last line. I put a bracket around mine because the subject matter is put away, but the translators used the word divorced. Listen to this again. In verse 31, it says, "Whosoever shall put away his wife." The subject matter is put away. But in verse 32, they use the word divorced. Now, is the word divorce and the word put away synonymous terms? Are those legal terms, and are they legally synonymous? And the answer is no, they're not. No. It's against the law, boys and girls, for you to put your wife away without a bill of divorce. Remember, Deuteronomy 24 tells you, if you're going to put her away, you give her a bill of divorce. Now, if you're going to divorce her, this woman has to have this bill of divorce. And why is that? Because without the bill of divorce, females cannot have two husbands. A female has to have a bill of divorce. It's against the law for you to put her out of your house, to put her away without the bill of divorce. And if you do, you cause her to commit adultery. But it's not against the law to divorce her by giving her the bill of divorce. It's against the law to put her out without giving her the bill of divorce. That's the crime. Very important. Here's why. One time I had a guy in here, and he'd been married, and we were talking about this thing of the bill of divorce, and so I said, well, did you give your wife a bill of divorce? And he said, no, I didn't. And I pointed out to him that the law requires that you give her a bill of divorce, and he said, well, that's true. It's true if I put her out, but I didn't put her out. She ran off with another man. She ran off with the postman and divorced me. And he said, I'm a man and I can have two wives. She's a woman and she cannot have two husbands. She commits adultery. She never gave me a bill of divorce, and I didn't give her a bill of divorce. And she can go take that up with God in the judgment. I don't have any duty to give her a bill of divorce. And you'll see this example with David and a woman by the name of Michal, who happened to be Saul's daughter. Now, David spent a lot of money on this woman. He went out and killed 200 Philistines to get that woman. He paid a bride price of 200 Philistine foreskins. That was a pretty unusual bride price, but that was, you know. After all, you're marrying the king's daughter, you know, I guess you do what you got to do. Well, she got lippy with him one day, and David put her away without a bill of divorce. Put her away. So she couldn't remarry. And he never had sexual relations with her again. So there's a couple of anomalies that come up, you know, in this thing called marriage and divorce. So in Matthew 5, 31 and 32, you have a mistranslation, which is translated correctly. Let's see if I can find it over here in Luke 16 or 18. Let's see if I can find that. Matthew, Mark, Luke. Over here in Luke, let's try 16, 18 and see what that gives us. Or 18, 16. Here I am with chapter 18, verse 16. Nope. Let's try Luke chapter 16, verse 18 and see what we get. Yeah. In Luke 16, verse 18, this subject matter is translated correctly. It says, "Whosoever puts away his wife and marries another commits adultery. Whosoever marries her that is put away from her husband commits adultery." Now, putting somebody away is the equivalent of what we call today in law an annulment. Annulment. A divorce is a piece of paper that says, I divorce you. it ought to be written up a little more professionally than I divorce you, but that's the bottom line. I'm going to divorce you, and here's your bill of divorcement. Now get out of here. To put her away is to put her out without the bill of divorcement, and without it, that woman cannot remarry unless she divorces you. So a question arises, can a female divorce her husband, and can a husband divorce her his wife? The answer is absolutely. There's one law in this country, boys and girls, and under the subject matter of law, God says there's one law in the land. There's a law to the homeborn and a law to the stranger. And boys and girls, women are homeborn. One law to the homeborn. Same law for the stranger. That's the immigrant from Mexico. Now, that's the way that game is played. And like I said, you know, marriage has a lot to it. Sexual relations has a lot to it. And this wrong use of sex can get you killed. And alimony and child support are the milder forms of punishment that come from the unlawful use of sex and sexual relations. The unlawful use of marriage and divorce. Marriage and divorce come into this thing of sexual relations. When boys and girls get together, sexual relations is the natural outcome. And it's caused by the gastric juices that are running around in your bodies. It's an emotional response. It's a physical response. We'll talk a little about that physical response and this thing of a wife that's on top of her husband. I'm not talking facetiously now, but when she's on top of her marriage. A woman on top of her marriage knows how to perform the duty of a wife. There was a couple of stories. I'll just relate one. We're just about out of time. I'll relate one to you. Where I heard this story. I hadn't heard it personally, but I heard this story. This guy was kind of horny, and he wanted to have sex, and his wife said, "Why don't you go take a cold shower?" Let me tell you, boys and girls, you know, if you're a female and you have to urinate, and you're driving down the road and you look over to your husband and say, "Would you find a restroom for me? I have to urinate." And your husband says, "Why don't you just sit back and take a cold shower?" What would you think of that? Ladies, a cold shower does not solve your urination problem any more than a cold shower solves a man's semen problem. And a wise woman should know that. We'll talk a little more about that next time when we talk about this thing of sex and reproduction from the scope or from the perspective of the Bible. Yeah, the Bible of all books. Let me remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. And the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on a compact disc. If you'd like more information, just go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.